Ready, Carla?
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone. We'll return to our council meeting. Thanks for coming.
Hey, how are you?
It's good to see you.
We just had the opportunity to thank a lot of people, both our first responders and a lot of volunteers who did a great job in a big storm and a big explosion, and we're very proud of them. So we appreciate them being here and taking that moment. Now we're going to move on to the next item of business on our calendar, which is item 1226.
1226, adopt the open and accountable elections policy.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Before we get started, I know that many of us were shaken to hear of the death of Justin Bree, who was formerly with the Community Alliance of Talents. And I had mentioned in the presentation we just had how our first responders, firefighters, and police officers often take care of people who are experiencing mental illnesses. So I couldn't start this other item without just a moment of silence to think of all the wonderful work that Justin had done with the Community Alliance of Tenants. So if we could just have a few moments of silence. Thank you. So, it's been a long time coming today. Let me start by being very clear to everyone. This proposal is as important to me as paid sick time. In fact, perhaps more so. Paid sick time, which was supported unanimously by the five of us in the first 3 months when we began working together, gave thousands of low-income Portlanders the ability to take time off work to care for themselves or a child when ill. Portland's earned sick time ordinance led to statewide adoption and is pushing change at the national level. I know that each member of the council shares my satisfaction in forwarding that agenda for the people of Portland and every worker in our country. Now, open and accountable elections is a new improved public campaign financing system which would give every Portland resident the opportunity for meaningful engagement in elections to the Portland City Council. Today, 5 days before the end of the most frightening and divisive presidential election in my lifetime, I am more than ever committed to promoting positive, effective community engagement in elections here in Portland. I particularly thank Mayor Hales, whose support may make enactment of this proposal one of his enduring legacies. This issue really, really matters to me, and I know it matters a lot to everybody who's here today. Thank you for coming. The most difficult challenge facing our country today is lack of trust in government. I believe this proposal will help to address that issue. The policy will make Portland City Council elections more open, providing opportunities for more people to engage with power in the democratic process as campaign contributors and as candidates. And it will be accountable, building on the great work improving policies and practices on reporting and transparency led by Commissioner Fish and Auditor Caballero. This proposal sets high standards of financial reporting for all candidates, whether or not they choose to use the voluntary campaign finance system. Mayor Hales and I first started talking about developing a public campaign finance proposal in the middle of last year, when he decided to spend the remainder of his term in office working for the people of Portland, rather than campaigning and fundraising to win re-election. Like Mayor Adams, he chose the most honorable option available to him. Incumbents shouldn't have to make that choice. It should be possible to work full-time for the City of Portland and run for re-election on a more level playing field with candidates offering different skills and different community connections also being able to run. My staff and I have partnered with many community-based organizations and individuals focusing on increasing access and improving democracy to reach the proposal that's before us today. Representatives from Osberg, Common Cause, Every Voice, Sightline, Service Employees International Union, the League of Women Voters of Portland, ColorPAC, United Oregon, APANO, Working Families Party, and the Coalition of Communities of Color have participated in the discussions over specific aspects of this policy. These organizations and my staff team, led by Christina Nieves and Tim Crail, have partnered with representatives from the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 555, the NAACP Portland Chapter, Main Street Alliance, AARP, Democracy Spring, Bernie PDX, Portland Forward, Latino Network, Communication Workers of America Local 7901, Sierra Club, and the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, who have all shared information with their members and participated in discussions. I vividly remember the speech that Commissioner Fish gave when voting in support of paid sick time. he said that the community demanded that the council take action. This open and accountable elections proposal is another issue where I am responding to Portlanders eager for change in financing city elections. Now, today we're going to have the first reading of the proposal. The goal of today's hearing is to explain the proposal, hear from community members, and take questions from council. After the hearing, I will work on amendments to the proposal in response to the suggestions we hear, and then return a revised proposal to council for a second first hearing, another opportunity to comment on a revised proposal, just like we did for paid sick time. Already some concerns are known as a result of discussions inside City Hall and in public meetings. One example is that the city auditor does not want her office to be involved in implementation of the program. The proposed code language already allows the city to contract out the administration of the program, but I pledge to define that option more clearly and to remove the auditor from the code language in response to her concerns. Depending on the outcome of the election next week, there may be opportunities to partner in an intergovernmental agreement with other agencies for the administration of the proposed system. Let me be very clear again. Nobody will be forced to participate in this program, whether as a candidate or as an implementer. This is a voluntary system, and everyone choosing to engage in it, from donors to candidates to administration, will do so only if they want to. The Open and Accountable Elections Small Donation Matching Program is much different from the previous voter-owned elections grant system adopted by the council in 2005 and narrowly defeated by voters in 2010. By approximately 1,600 votes out of 210,000, at a time when it was the middle of the recession and the fire bond that would normally pass by 70 or 80% only squeaked through by about the same margin. I read that vote as Portlanders saying, not now and not this system, rather than nothing like this ever again. The proposal I'm asking Council to consider today is based on New York City's proven model, which has been in place since 1988. The voter-owned election system that was formulated under Mayor Potter was a new thing that we thought would be very Portland-centric, and it was indeed, but it had flaws, and I think that was one of the reasons that it was voted down. And so we didn't want to start another new program that hasn't been tested. In New York City, it's been very successful. It's increased the range of neighborhoods where candidates engage in fundraising, and also broadened the diversity of candidates seeking and winning election to the New York City Council. The Open and Accountable Elections proposal would create a small donation matching system and adopt new provisions of accountability and transparency for all election campaigns. I'm going to just deal with a few of the comments I've heard in advance so that I can get all this information out. Some Portlanders have questioned why this proposal is not a referral to the voters. The council votes on over $400 million in general fund discretionary dollars every year in the city budget process, which is led by the mayor and guided by the Independent City Budget Office, which was created 4 years ago by code that I initiated. This council does not ask voters to approve every dedication of each $1 million. We don't ask voters to vote on that. We have the responsibility to make those votes ourselves. We're putting a cap on the proposed fund of 0.2% of the general fund, which is about $1.2 million per year. Every year that I have been on the council, we have granted special appropriations to outside entities in excess of the cost of this program. The charter provides for community recourse when citizens disagree with an action of the council. When the council voted to fluoridate Portland's water, community members connected signatures to refer the matter to the voters, and Portlanders reversed the council's decision. That process is how our city's democracy works. I hope the council will show leadership in adopting the final version of this proposal, trusting that if our community doesn't agree, voters will pursue the referral option. Now, some say that this is not the most urgent challenge we're managing compared with funding shelters and permanent affordable housing, building community trust in the police bureau, and other difficult problems. And I agree. And investing in democracy and community engagement is also important. The open and accountable election system will address one of the most fundamental challenges that we face, which is that many Portlanders don't trust their elected representatives to do the right thing for the right reasons, in part because of the perceived influence of campaign contributions in elections. I believe this proposal is essential to restoring trust in government, along with many other things that we will need to work on as well. So as I said, this is the first public hearing. As with the earned sick time, I expect the council and community members will have proposed amendments that we'll need to address. I ask my colleagues on the council to listen to public input before expressing concerns or proposed amendments, because we'll have plenty of time for that before the next hearing. I promise to take the time needed to refine the proposal, which considers all input, both councils and community members, and return for that first reading before the end of the year. Now, we're going to also do a little bit different today. We've got three invited speakers who have time constraints. So Oregon Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, NAACP Portland President Joanne Hardesty, and United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555 Representative Jeff Anderson are going to speak first. After the speakers, Christina Nieves will run through a presentation of the proposal, and I think we've given you the kind of the run of show for council so that you'll kind of know what to expect. And we do appreciate everybody's patience as we get the information out. Thank you so much for taking the time to come to see us today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioners Novick, Saltzman, and Fish. It is great to see you, and it was a real pleasure to be able to see the honoring of our first responders. I cannot believe that we were so fortunate to have their work and so such good luck that we had no loss of life. Today I'm here, my name is Dianne Rosenbaum, I am a state senator, as I was introduced, but I'm also a member of a legislatively created task force on campaign finance reform that was convened by our Secretary of State, Jean Atkins, that's been meeting for over a year. I also chair the Senate Rules Committee that deals with all the elections, issues, and proposals in the state legislature. And I am here and pleased to kick off this hearing in support of the open and accountable elections proposal that Commissioner Fritz has brought forward. I thought in my testimony I would try to put this in a little larger context of why I think we have a problem that needs to be addressed, and then why I think this specific proposal is a great step that you can take and we as a city can take in addressing it. As has already been said, we do have a huge problem in terms of credibility and lack of trust in government. And I just want to say at the outset that I am somebody who has raised large amounts of money in my 18 years in elected office. I've been the Senate Majority Leader, so a big part of my job has been raising what I consider fairly obscene amounts of money to get people elected. I probably have called all of you at one time or another and asked you for money. So it's not that I think that money is inherently something that equates to corruption, or that, you know, for me personally, I have ever felt that I've compromised my integrity any more than I think you good people have compromised yours by virtue of living with a system that I think is very broken. But having said that, we are living in a time with an election where people really do believe, a lot of people in Portland, in Oregon, and around the country, that the system is rigged, that it's rigged against them, that they don't have the same voice that wealthy people and corporations have in our system. And frankly, although you could say a lot of things about it, I think in Oregon we have a particularly broken system of the way we fund campaigns and encourage people to run for office. So, for example, we are one of only six states in the United States that has no limits on campaign contributions. And it's not that we figured something out that's so great that other states haven't. It's because we have a very hefty free speech proposal in our Constitution, and our Supreme Court at the state level has said that we can't have limits unless we amend the state constitution. And that's something that needs to happen, but we can't use that tool in the toolkit that other states have. And so the task force that I referred to earlier has been looking at a range of options for over a year of things that would make our system better. But because of this lack of any limits whatsoever, we have some of the most expensive campaigns for office in the entire country. So, for instance, 2 years ago in 2014, I think the total amount spent on state legislative races was in excess of $29 million. And so per capita, that put us ahead of states like Texas and California. I think almost every other state in the country, we spend more per voter for people to get elected. And I don't have the figures for running at your level, but I would assume that it may be similar. So what can we do about this problem? Because I think it is indeed a problem. It is a perception that people have that people who give the money speak with a louder voice than the average citizen can possibly bring. And whether or not that's true in every instance, I think it is a problem because it means that we're not only not addressing that credibility, but we're making it more difficult and putting up barriers for people who would like to run for office or even for ourselves. Because which of us really enjoys dialing for dollars during election time and spending half of our time doing that as opposed to the work that we're elected to do, whether it's solving affordable housing or transportation or any of the true challenges that we all ran for office to be able to address? And I do agree with Commissioner Fritz that looking at the analogy of paid sick days is the right place to look, that we may be able to do something here in Portland that could become a model for the entire state of Oregon. So just getting down to brass tacks, this proposal, I think, is a very good place to start. In fact, the Task Force on Campaign Finance Reform has a subcommittee that is looking at public funding as one model that would be legal under the existing constitutional interpretations of our state constitution, something we could enact right away at a state level or a local level. We have a subcommittee that has set out some parameters for what we think such a system should look like, and we'll be meeting in our final meeting in December and voting to adopt a recommendation that may include this proposal. So I think it's a great place to start to have a voluntary system that allows people who are serious candidates to be able to collect small donations and then qualify for a viable amount of public funding to allow them to run for office. No one knows if this is going to reshape the face of government in Portland. I would love to see City Council, you all look great today, but I would love to see another woman on the City Council someday. I think Amanda probably would enjoy that too. I would love to see people of color elected in greater numbers in the state legislature and on the City Council. And I think that may be a consequence of adopting the system. And that's why, as you've heard, a coalition of 31 organizations have come together to support this specific proposal, because the time is right. Portland is the right place, I think, to be taking this up. I am hopeful that Portland can adopt this system and that this can become a model for the state of Oregon to do something. It isn't a magic bullet that's going to solve every problem. I still believe we need to amend the state constitution. I personally believe, I think like most Portlanders and Oregonians, that Citizens United, that decision 6 years ago by our U.S. Supreme Court was wrongly decided, that ultimately needs to be changed, but that's not something that we can do today. Today, adopting open and accountable elections for Portland is something that you have the power to do. I think that will go a long way to restoring some credibility and trust to what I think is a broken system at a statewide level. And I applaud Commissioner Fritz for putting this proposal together. I hope that you will give it your serious consideration. I will be here to help in any way I can, and thank you for allowing me to kick off the hearing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Who'd like to go next, Joanne?
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, Saltzman, Fish, and Novick. My name is Joanne Hardesty, and today I wear the hat as president of the NAACP Portland branch. The NAACP and a community coalition representing over 30 organizations that reflect the diversity and inclusivity of Portland are all behind the measure that we are considering today. We represent communities of color, youth, elders, small business owners, and community-based leaders that collectively represent every corner of our great city. Today, we celebrate the 102nd anniversary of the NAACP Portland branch. It's the oldest continuously operating branch west of the Mississippi. And in less than 2 hours, we will host and honor the long legacy of multiracial, multicultural, and multigenerational cooperation and collaboration to eliminate racial hatred and racial discrimination in the Portland metro area. As the president, I have many things I need to do today, but nothing as important as me being here to speak in support of this measure today. I'm here now because this issue is really at the heart of our democracy. The people's ability to run and serve in public office and to believe their financial contribution, no matter how small, matters. I am here to ask you to unanimously support this proven system of public financing for city council elections and to use your pulpit to educate the public on the necessity of this system and why voting this measure into law now is vital. When I ran for office, there was campaign and donor limits in place. I could only raise $100 from an individual or a business owner, and with a maximum of $25,000 for my legislative race. I spent a lot of time on doorsteps talking with people who could vote for me and give me $100. It made a huge impact on me and the voters I talked to. They felt that they were in that election with me. That system was only in place for one election cycle, but I have no doubt without it, I would not have been elected to serve as a state representative in the Oregon House of Representatives. The last couple of times I testified in this building were difficult. As an activist, it's my job to provide you with the perspective on critical policy decisions. As my elected representatives, it's your job to take my input and to consider it along with many, many other input. And sometimes it doesn't always turn out the way I would hope. As is the case with this policy, today's another day. Today I stand united with 31 diverse organizations, many you will hear from later today, to encourage you to be courageous and intentional. This is an opportunity for us to join together in a common vision of Portland City Hall that is open for all, regardless of your zip code, your gender, your age, your socioeconomic status, and of course, your race. The public finance system before you today is proven effective at engaging diverse communities in the democratic process. After this election season ends, many will believe today's election system is broken and only works for a very small number of people, and they won't be all wrong. Our coalition represents thousands of Portlanders who believe City Hall should represent all Portlanders. And we elect our leadership to lead. Not pass the buck, because you know intimately what it takes today to run and serve in public office. I lost my spot. You know the barriers others face. Mayor Hales stated he decided to spend this year being mayor rather than running for mayor when asked why he wasn't running for re-election. That statement stayed with me. Ironically, only 2 African Americans and 6 women have ever served on the Portland City Council. Your vote can move us towards that vision of a city council that reflects all the riches of Portland and all the riches Portland has to offer, and an opportunity for regular folks to believe that they also have a role in our democracy. Thank you for listening. And if you're done around 4:30 or so, we got a party happening at Portland Prime. Love to see you there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll try to make it.
Thank you.
Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioners, Mayor. Thanks, Commissioner Fritz, for the leadership on bringing this issue forward. My name is Jeff Anderson. I'm Secretary Treasurer of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 555. In additional reference, I'm the President of the Northwest Oregon Labor Council. And I'm co-chair, if I'm remiss if I don't say, I'm the state co-chair of the Oregon Working Families Party. UFCW Local 555 represents 24,000 members who work in retail, healthcare, and manufacturing. Our union is supportive of this proposal because we see firsthand how the influence of big money plays between those at the top and those at the bottom. Large amounts of money is ruining our democratic experience in this country. Unlimited and unbridled flow of money has created an unlevel playing field. The middle class has been squeezed by policies favoring the wealth in this country. When a wealthy corporation can call the Oregon legislature into session for a special tax deal, you know we have an influence problem. Phil Knight's recent contribution of $380,000 to some Oregon legislative candidates dwarfs the largest private sector union in Oregon. This is a timely case study why we need reforms. The cost shift to the little guy affects my members and their families by reducing much needed resources to pay for education, health care, and job training, and much more. I find it incredible that thousands of my members can pool their dollars together only to have that amount be diminished or offset by a single large donor. They say all politics is local. That's why we start at home here in Portland. The Oregon, the Open and Accountability Elections Reform takes a much needed step in equalizing the playing field. Placing dollar limits while matching small donor dollars will bring a voice to the community that feels shut out, and I believe will ensure working families of Portland will have a voice. So on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 555, we ask that you support this measure as it goes through whatever iterations that it's needed to make it a fine product. But put Oregon on the map, put Portland on the map, and let's be the leaders in election reform. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Fritz, can I pose one question? Because we're going to lose Jeff. Jeff, there's Commissioner Fritz has said we're going to discuss amendments at another hearing. And I'm actually glad she did, because, Joanne, you are often the voice of reason on this one. When we have these hearings, we dump a lot of amendments out. People don't know what the amendments are. We spend the first 2 hours arguing about the amendments as people are waiting to testify. So I applaud Amanda for putting that over to a second hearing so we get a chance to hear from everyone today. There is a significant impact on the labor movement in this current draft. And as I read it, it says that union PAC money for participating candidates is not allowed. So that's clear. The match is available to every union member, so a union member that makes a $50 contribution can have it matched, so it becomes a $300 contribution. Has to be their money. It can't be a pass-through. There is a cap on in-kind contributions to a participating candidate of $20,000, and I'm guessing, because I've been on the ballot a few times, that I'm guessing that's the kind of stuff that labor does, like sending out a brochure or something where you put a value on it, but it's capped at $20,000. I think that's pretty clear. And then there is an exemption for so-called independent expenditures. So between today and our next hearing date, would you make sure that the definitions of in-kind and independent expenditures are clear and that they reflect the real world of labor movement activities at election time, which includes telephoning members to say get out and vote, alerting members as to who's been endorsed by the union, and other activities which could either become in-kind or independent, depending on the definitions. And I want to make sure that we've got it right based on your experience.
Just from my experience, because we have a political action committee, our Active Ballot Club. We have about 7,500 members that contribute small amounts into it. That's a federal PAC that I would assume would be excluded from this, but Oregon is a soft money state, and that's where there's this unlimited. So what's interesting is that it doesn't read that I couldn't use general fund dollars of my members if they approve it through the executive board. That's one. So it probably does need to have some clarity, but I would say that...
If I might just interrupt, I think some of these questions will be answered, so maybe it's a good segue to get Christian to do the presentation.
Because we're going to lose him, I just want to say that because you deal with this at election time, the difference between an in-kind and an independent, I just want to make sure that something you do, alerting your members as to who you support, doesn't trigger another provision of this, which then is used against a participating a candidate. So I want to make sure the language is clear.
Right, and I would also
you could send
want
us
to,
an email on that.
But I think it's just, if I could, I want to say it's really important. Unions communicating with their members will not be excluded by this provision.
Yep.
I mean, there are certain things that are preempted, and in democracy of unions talking to their own members would have no impact under this ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Do you have additional folks that you're going to call on?
I'd like to have Christina Nieves come up and do the presentation.
Okay, come on up, Christina, please.
And then we're going to hear from the auditor immediately after that. And Tim Crail, my chief of staff, has also been working very intensively on this.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Tim Crail, Office of Commissioner Amanda Fritz. I think before Christina goes through her presentation, I think there might have been one or more of your colleagues that wanted to have a quick opening statement as well. So I want to give that opportunity here.
Well, I'll say a little because I want this to move on. I think we're going to hear a lot today about access to democracy, and we've already heard from the first three folks on that subject. And as I've thought about this proposal, I thought back to not just my most recent decision, because one of my friends actually said to me, for the next year, you can either be a great mayor or a great candidate. Pick one. And that was putting it kind of starkly, but it did clarify my thinking. But I think back to my first campaign, where I ran a shoestring campaign with a lot of volunteers making lawn signs out of wood, not plastic in those days. That's how long ago it was. That's why my hair is gray. But we did a lot of shoe leather. We knocked on 25,000 doors, and the city was smaller. It was physically and numerically smaller. Basically, we hadn't annexed all that East County that's now East Portland. And, of course, we hadn't added all the growth that we've had. We had a daily newspaper that endorsed candidates. The ability of a new candidate to succeed then is noticeably different than it is today. And so I want to hear from people, perhaps we will, from people who've been attempting to run for office, as well as those who, like Ms. Hardesty and the five of us, who've succeeded at it. But I just thought a lot about that personal experience, that it was possible then for a new candidate who hadn't run for office before to run a shoe leather campaign on a modest budget and win. Can anyone say that's still true? Other comments?
I wanted to make a comment. One, I just wanted to say that there's three concerns that I have, and I think others have.
One is you will need it. Steve, we lost you.
There you go. Oh. Carlos, whispering incantations over our PA system.
How about now?
There we go.
Okay.
There
you go. So one concern is we do need to figure out who's going to administer it. I hope we can resolve that concern. Another concern is how we're going to pay for it. And I know it's proposed to be only a couple of billion dollars or less a year, but we are sort of spent to our limit. We spend our discretionary money on police, fire, parks, and housing. And although it's a small fraction of the budget, we spend hours every year during the budget process talking about whether we can afford much smaller items like the Selwood Community Center or the Buckman Pool. So we will need to figure out how to pay for it. I also have to say that I'm not sure that this will work with the annual limits that Commissioner Fritz has proposed, because I do think that it takes about $250,000 to run a campaign that can reach a majority of 600,000 Portlanders. And if we have a $1.2 million annual limit, then if we have three viable mayoral candidates and six viable council candidates, then we're going to be asking people to run with less than they actually need to run an effective campaign. So I do have those three concerns. I really, really hope that we can make this work. I really, really hope we can. The major reason, of course, is that right now in the city where we all run citywide, a city of 600,000, people are deterred from running because if they don't have personal wealth or know a bunch of other people with personal wealth, because they look at the task of fundraising and they just say, I can't do it. So this proposal would make it possible for people without personal wealth or without knowing lots of people with personal wealth to run. That in and of itself is a reason to adopt this. I want to provide another subtler reason. Senator Rosenbaum, you're wrong. This proposal would not stop us from spending lots of time raising money. We'd still have to spend a ton of time, but it would change the way that time is spent. I don't think people realize how much time is involved in raising money. If you've got 6 months to raise $250,000, then even if you can allocate 10 hours a week to raising money, which is a lot, that means that you have to raise $1,000 an hour. And that is why you wind up talking to people who have money, because you couldn't raise that much talking only to people who have $50, because that would mean you'd have to get 20 contributions an hour. And most of the people you call, you don't reach. And then some of the people you call don't give you money. So you're not able to have 21-minute conversations with people to raise money at $50 a pop. It's just not physically possible, which is why
people wind up spending most of their time talking to the small minority of people who can afford to write $500 checks, because you can raise $1,000 an hour
if you write $500 checks. So what this proposal would do
is level the playing field
so that you can afford to spend some time talking to somebody who can give $50 and hear their concerns, which might be different from the concerns of people who can give $500, because that $50 contribution is actually a $300 contribution. And that's a chunk out of the $1,000 an hour you have to raise. And I'll just give one example of how I think this makes things different. Most of the people with enough money to give $500 are homeowners. There aren't too many renters. I mean, there's a limited number of renters who can do that. So we wind up hearing largely during campaigns concerns from homeowners. If everybody who can give $50 can really give $300, then that means I think we'd spend a lot more time listening to renters. That's just one example, but I just wanted to, as somebody who, as Senator Rosenbaum said, has raised a bunch of money, I just wanted to highlight what I think might be an unknown aspect of this, which is that one function of our current system is we spend too much time talking to people with money and not enough people without that much money, and this would even that out.
Thank you. Other comments at this point?
Mayor, I have a lot of questions, but we're at risk here, I think, of not getting to the public.
Let's move on, please. So let's proceed with your presentation, and we'll take more testimony after that.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Christina Nieves. I work in the office of Commissioner Amanda Fritz. And I want to start my presentation with just reiterating a couple of points that have already been said. Answering the question why. Why do we need this election reform? Why do we need open and accountable elections? Through creating this policy, we saw two glaring issues. Number one, there is a clear imbalance, an imbalance that exists in elections, an imbalance in access, an imbalance in opportunity. We also hear, as Commissioner Fritz said, this mistrust in the election process and this mistrust in government. And as stated in the ordinance findings, the Pew Research Center came out with a poll that said about 19% of people in the United States say they trust the government. That's a really broad statement, so let's get more specific. 84% of people polled in the United States say they believe money plays too big of a role in campaigns. So we have this issue of trust and then this issue of the role of money in campaigns. And we know that money certainly plays a role in campaigns. This graphic brought to you by the Sightline Institute shows that it costs about $1 billion to run for U.S. president, and that cost has greatly increased over the years. Here in Portland, it can cost over $1 million to become Portland mayor. That cost has greatly increased over the years. So I think we can all agree that it does take a substantial amount of money to run a successful campaign. Candidates must fundraise. They must raise and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars or even over $1 million. The impact of this is that otherwise viable candidates, candidates without political connections, without financial connections, or who aren't independently wealthy, are not able to participate. They are essentially selected out of being able to participate in this process. But what we do see is a small group of financially well-off, of wealthy individuals who are able to engage in the system. This graphic brought to you by Osberg and Sightline shows that in 2012, just 600 donors, only 600 donors in the entire city of Portland, accounted for 60% of total donations given during an election. So again, you see a small group of wealthy individuals who are able to fund these campaigns are doing just that. And candidates must then, of course, engage with the small group of wealthy individuals in order to, as Commissioner Novick said, fund their campaign. But for the average individual, somebody who isn't able to make a big donation or write a check to a candidate, the optics issue exists. They may feel that they see the small group of wealthy individuals, and sometimes it's the same individuals, consistently helping people get into positions of power. And that optics issue causes a negative impact on the overall trust in the process. So how do we solve this issue? We propose, through open and accountable elections, adopting a small donor matching program. This program is voluntary. Candidates may choose to participate in this program. Candidates who participate must commit to only accepting small allowable donations from registered Portland voters. And the idea is that each small donation received would receive a certain amount of public match. So the idea is that this candidate would collect many small donations and use the public funds, aggregate those donations to fund their campaign. We're going to jump right into the details. We have an allowable contribution limit set of $250, which means that a candidate who chooses to participate in this program would commit to not accepting a donation that's over that amount. We have a match rate set of 6-1. Currently in the policy, 6-1. For up to $50, which means that anything between $5 and $50 could receive a 6-1 match. We are allowing up to $250, which means that if somebody gives a $250 donation, up to $50 would receive the 6-1 match. The remaining $200 would be allowed as a contribution, but it simply would not receive a public match. And trying to balance the public funds and the private funds dedicated to a candidate's campaign. So to show you how this works, this candidate decides to opt into the program. She'll have to meet a few requirements and thresholds, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but she meets those thresholds, and she gets a $50 donation. With the current match rate set, that $50 donation would become $350. So the $50 is matched 6-1, and then you add the original $50 donation, that totals $350. So as you can see, if this candidate is serious about talking to many community members, going to many neighborhoods, collecting many small donations, she can pretty quickly become financially competitive. The great thing about this program is that consistently throughout the election, this candidate will have to continue to engage with many people. She will have to go talk to many individuals. The fundraising aspect is not taken out of this program. The difference is now somebody who can only give a $20 donation or a $50 donation can have a positive impact on this candidate's campaign. In order to participate, this candidate would have to file for office by petition. So currently, you can pay a $30 or a $50 application fee to run for city elected office. But this is really about individual support, getting the support of Portlanders. So right off the bat, this candidate will need to show that she has support of community members through filing for office by petition. She will need to become certified as a public finance candidate, establish a campaign account, and then again, only accept allowable donations, only accept donations that are $250 or below. We also have some additional thresholds for participation. This is public funds, so we want to make sure that these are serious and viable candidates. Before receiving public funds, a candidate running for commissioner seat would need to collect donations from at least 250 individuals, for an aggregate total of at least $2,500. For mayor's seat, the threshold is 500 individuals for an aggregate total of at least $5,000. Another key component of this program is that all of these contributions may only come from individuals. Again, this is about individuals' engagement with the election process. So participating candidates may only accept contributions from individuals.
Christina, the threshold for participation could also be the same dollars for that's ultimately eligible for a match, correct?
I do believe so, right?
It could be,
yes,
but that's not how we've currently set it up.
Right.
That's not how it's currently set up?
Right, but it could be.
So it would be. So currently you'd raise the $2,500 from $250, you'd become a participating candidate, and then future fundraising would be matched. That's the current system?
That's correct.
Okay, good.
We do have one exception to the individual provision, and that is $5,000 of seed money. Candidates may begin with up to $5,000 of seed money. The seed money can come from any legal source, and it can come in any amount, and it can pay for a website or anything that a campaign really needs to start off a campaign in a good foot. We are also allowing in-kind donations, as Commissioner Fish pointed out. We are allowing $20,000 of in-kind donations in the primary and up to $20,000 in the general, so a total of $40,000 throughout the election. We will be exempting in-kinds such as volunteer in-kinds, efforts for phone banking in-kinds, canvassing in-kinds. These in-kinds really seek to increase civic participation and voter participation. This is the basis of what we want from open and accountable elections, so we will be exempting these types of in-kind donations. We have also set contribution limits. In this program, these contribution limits serve as de facto spending limits. So a candidate running for commissioner seat would be capped at $550,000 for the entire election. $250,000 of that could be spent in the primary. The remaining $300,000 of that could be spent in the general. For mayor's seat, the cap is $950,000. $380,000 in the primary, and the remaining $570,000 in the general. These contribution limits serve as a way to check the rising cost of campaigns. As we saw, the cost of campaigns is increasing greatly. It's also a way to limit the amount of public funds dedicated to this program. We are going to be limiting the funds dedicated to this program to 0.2% of the total general fund. And we do believe that, yes, we have a lot of needs in the city, but it's a small price to pay for increasing access for Portlanders and improving the trust in the election process. We have additional provisions of transparency and accountability. Throughout various discussions of open and accountable elections, we heard a concern essentially to protect against fraud. So we will be raising our fines for those who make intentional fraudulent uses of the program. We understand this is a new program. We will have new candidates, hopefully. So there will certainly be a learning curve. We don't want to impose these high fines on those making honest mistakes. But for those who make intentional fraudulent uses of the program, they will be facing hefty fines. There will be strict limits on the allowed uses of public funds, no wining and dining with public funds, and no lavish travel expenses. Again, we want to make sure that we're protecting our public funds and using them in an appropriate manner.
Let me also add, I think I read, and Tim pointed me to this, that it also, there's a prohibition on hiring family members during the campaign.
That
so you can't take the money and essentially build a home office business with public money either.
That is correct. Candidates will also be prohibited from going into debt or self-financing their campaigns. Candidates who participate in this program must use the program appropriately, and that is by engaging with a broad group of donors, talking to many people, and being held accountable to many people.
What do you mean by not going into debt?
So they couldn't take out a loan. Yeah. We will also be increasing our reporting requirements. We want to be able to quickly track what is being reported and what actually occurred. So we will be increasing our reporting requirements under this program. I believe most of the concerns around reporting has already been taken care of. Commissioner Fish did pass a lobbyist reporting policy earlier this year. Providing oversight to this will be an open and accountable elections commission. This commission will consist of members in the community interested in community organizing, interested in campaign finance, or who have experience with campaigns and funding campaigns. So we hope this will be a holistic set of folks to provide expertise and do things like safeguarding our public dollars, making sure that we're keeping in line with best practices to protect against fraud. They will be making recommendations through assessments of audit reports and speaking with candidates who go through this program. They will be able to assess whether or not changes need to be made, changes to matching ratios, changes to contribution limits, or other aspects of the program. Essentially, they will be in charge of overall program improvement. We know that systems that are able to have frequent assessments and change when necessary, these programs have a higher chance of success. Programs that remain stagnant and that are not able to change, these programs meet serious challenges. So we hope that the Open and Accountable Elections Commission will be able to provide the program the ability to have longevity and be something the City of Portland can be proud of. As Commissioner Fritz said, we base this off of New York City's model. New York City's model is proven. It's been in place for almost 30 years. And other local municipalities are thinking about adopting similar programs. And just to show you what an impact these programs can have, this is a map of New York City during an election without a small donor financing program. And the colored areas in red, pink, and blue show small donation areas, areas where people were able to give small donations. And this is during an election with a small donor matching program. Candidates are now going to 90% of neighborhoods, talking to people from 90% of neighborhoods, rather than just going to the wealthiest areas. That is the impact. Candidates are going to more places and talking to more people. That really should be what campaigning is all about. As we assessed various versions of small donor matching programs, we saw consistencies across the board. Number one, we saw the empowerment of small donors. People who are only able to give a $20 donation or a $30 donation, candidates are now going to their neighborhoods. They're talking to their neighbors. We see a reduction in big donations, a reduced need for big donations. We also see the empowerment of our candidates. Candidates no longer have to worry about the optics issue if they commit to this program. Candidates now have a different way of running. They can spend time talking to people who can only give small donations. And finally, we are removing some barriers for new candidates, candidates who perhaps aren't independently wealthy, who aren't politically connected, or who aren't financially connected. We are allowing these candidates an opportunity to participate in the election system. We also see that candidates have the ability to be competitive. New York City has a very high participation rate for candidates in this program. And finally, we see that our public dollars are used wisely. As Commissioner Fritz said, we have a lot of needs here in the city. When we adopt open and accountable elections, we are making a statement. As Portland, we prioritize true democracy. We're making a statement that above all else, every voice and every Portlander has the equal right to be heard during the election process. So I will conclude my presentation and hand it off for clarifying questions.
Before we take any questions, I did want to clarify my answer to Commissioner Fish. You asked about the original 250 donors, $2,500.
Yeah.
To the extent that those are under $50, they would be matched. The question I thought I was answering was they can come in any amounts. Somebody could give $250, and you could get to that $2,500 total as long as you also had the 250 donors. So it's a combination of donations of any size. But for those that are below $50, those would be matched.
Commissioner Fritz, can I ask you something?
Sure.
In the run a show, we have a bunch of panels to follow and some other things and then questions. As you know, I have an excused absence at 5, so I won't be for that. And I want to be guided by your preference. I could ask 6 questions for which I would not seek an answer, but to put them out there, that would also give people testifying an opportunity to address them if they think they're relevant. Or I can wait for the second hearing.
Oh, you can get them to me, immediately afterwards.
Yeah. So you have a lot, and we're going till 6. So what's your preference?
I'd prefer to hear from as many people as we can today. Okay. Thank you.
So what are the estimated administrative costs of this program? And is that counted under the 0.2% of the general fund?
Yes, we have envisioned that it would count within the 1.2 cap. We don't have a firm number because we don't yet know who's going to administer it. Using rough figures, we had figured one full-time permanent FTE, overhead costs, other administrative costs, and then some seasonal employment if needed during the heaviest periods.
What does that ballpark out to?
Well, we're figuring, I mean, just a ballpark of 200,000, but that's so ballpark that I hate to even say it.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask our elected auditor to please come and share her thoughts on this.
And one other just point of order while she's coming up. I have to slip out for about 10 minutes for a conference call at some point in the next half hour. So when I leave, don't take it personally, but I will be right back.
Thank you for sharing.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I would also like to introduce former Auditor Gary Blackner for the record. I know you all know him. I am Mary Hall Caballero, Portland City Auditor. That's also for the record. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this item. I will start by saying I support the goals of having more competitive elections and more inclusive campaigns. I know that this issue has been a priority for Commissioner Fritz, and I respect the advocate community for its dedication in putting together a proposal that levels the playing field. I also appreciate Commissioner Fritz's acknowledgement that there is no intent to place the program in my office in light of my objections, but I do want to take this opportunity to explain my position. I understand why the Auditor's Office may seem like the natural home for this program, but unfortunately, my office does not have the capacity to take it. I do not have a management structure in place that could absorb additional programs and do them justice. My staff's time and resources are already spoken for among performance audits, police oversight, and the various other accountability and transparency functions. I could not devote the proper resources to the proposed program without shortchanging my existing responsibilities. I also have concerns about the program's design. The aggressive timetable and insufficient funding make it unlikely that the proposed program could be successfully implemented. The proposal envisions being fully operational by July the 1st, with the collection of seed money and receipt of in-kind donations as early as the end of this month. Yet, as the Budget Office notes in its fiscal impact analysis, there is no funding for this program in the current year. The proposal also does not provide the necessary funding to fulfill the management, legal, investigative, and administrative needs of the program in the out years. There also are a couple of things in the proposal that are problematic for my office, no matter who ultimately is responsible for the program. It sends disputes to the hearings office for resolution, which presents a conflict of interest because it is in the auditor's office. The second issue is that it potentially duplicates work done by the Secretary of State's office by requiring voluminous documents to also be filed with the elections officer in my office, which unnecessarily adds to her workload. You may recall that the city's first attempt at publicly financed campaigns, which was a joint effort by Commissioner Eric Sten and Auditor Blackmer, was undermined by fraud and ended when the electorate voted to discontinue the program. For these reasons alone, the city has no room for error in a successor program. It must be tightly managed and closely monitored. Notwithstanding the stated intent to place the program elsewhere, I think it's important to make clear why council needs my consent before it could assign the program to my office. For those who are not familiar, the auditor's charter mandated duties include performance of audits, maintenance of official records, provision of official certifications, and supervision of city elections. Each of these charter mandated duties take their meanings from corresponding sections of charter. According to charter, council may only assign other duties if the auditor consents. Programs within my office by consent include independent police review, the ombudsman, and the hearings office. The supervision of city elections is a confined mandate. It is described in Chapter 3 of the Charter. Chapter 3 lays out the nomination procedure for elective offices, the terms for holding office, and the timing of primary and general elections. In essence, the indispensable elements of city elections. Charter does not contemplate the supervision of elections as involving campaign financing or other discretionary programs related to elections. My reading of charter is consistent with how the Oregon Supreme Court treated analogous language in the state constitution. In a 1997 case, the Supreme Court determined that based on the text, context, and historical circumstances, the word elections in the state constitution did not include campaign financing. In summary, I am not in a position to assure Portlanders that implementation of the proposal would be successful and fraud risks could be controlled. For those reasons, I cannot offer my consent. And while I recognize that language was added intending to allow the city to contract out the administration of the program, I am still concerned that the proposal